The Around the NFL Podcast. Wishes they looked like Tom Brady.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast, presented by Head & Shoulders. My name is Dan Hansis, and I'm joined by a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Colleen Wolf, and Greg Rosenthal. What's up, people?
Hey.
Hey.
I should have worn my blue shirt.
This is
my blue button down.
This is embarrassing because we're going to have a hit on Up to the Minute on NFL Network airing 4 o'clock Eastern every day.
Check it out.
And we are all wearing very boring looking business blue shirts.
Well, we're basic guys.
It's just like
you can't run from it ultimately.
Sort of action figure clothing if you wanted action figures of like people that work in offices.
Exactly. what are you looking for ultimately from us? All right. This is, by the way, our Tuesday. There's a lot of housekeeping, and I guess it's a sign of support on some level from this building because I have some things to talk about. Number
Ooh.
One, this is, again, our Tuesday video show, 9:30 Eastern, 6:30 Pacific, overseas international audience. That's your problem.
Or just watch it anytime you want after that.
Or anytime
right.
you want, NFL.com/ATN video. Also, I should get it out there, the Pick'em, which is our one-hour-long network show that we do with Dave Damashek and also, Shepherding Logs, I think it's called.
Move what is
the
it?
Sticks. Sticks.
Shepherding Logs.
Shepherding. I mean, they really should have gone with that name. I can't believe they missed
that opportunity for that Twitter handle for Daniel Jeremiah.
It's a cabin home improvement show.
I think it is. I have not checked it out yet.
Moving sticks together.
So the Shepherding Logs podcast is also involved with it. But anyway, Pick'em airs on Saturday at 9 a.m., 2 p.m., 11 p.m. Eastern time, and then Sunday a re-air at 6 a.m. Eastern that leads into game day morning, which is
Whoa.
Connie Fox's program.
Ah!
How exciting.
So fun. How was your first weekend as a big-time NFL Network morning show host? You've got game day morning on Sunday. I mean, that's really big. And then you got Good Morning Football as well on Saturday.
I know. It's a lot. It's super fun. It feels the same as it did before I was doing those shows, but yeah.
Famously, last week you did not count this show amongst one of the many shows you're on. Have you changed your opinion on our program?
Yeah. In fact, I updated my Twitter profile, and it is now in there.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
How about
I didn't
this?
Want to step on anybody's toes and assume that I was just like a regular member,
Would
but
you
I
drop
guess since I'm on
you're
Tuesdays,
here every Tuesday.
I am.
Would you drop everything that you're doing, which is a significant piece of the pie here at NFL Network, to be on the Pick'em show for 5 or 6 minutes?
I could do it remotely, right?
I mean, I'm just saying, when it comes to the premier programming on the network, you realize what's leading into your Sunday
right.
business is us, and I think that's,
I would drop everything for you guys.
Aww. So there
that's
you go.
That's true.
Colleen is
not
on 3.5 shows. Let's compromise. Coming up on today's show, today's Around the NFL Podcast, we're going to review the two Monday Night Football games that took place in Denver and Minneapolis. And finally, I think it's called Minneapolis.
Correct.
Didn't pronunciate there properly. Mm. Also, a Thursday night preview. Greg's excited. He was carrying that water for the network on Sunday night show. It's a Jacksonville-Houston matchup, I believe.
No, that's totally incorrect. The Texans are playing the Cincinnati Bengals.
Close.
Good week to be ignoring the Bengals, Dan.
One of the great playoff rivalries of this decade.
Very exciting.
Yep.
And, we don't do this often, so, hold on to your butts. But Doug Baldwin, the Seattle Seahawks wide receiver, will be on the team cam from Seahawks headquarters, and we're going to talk to Dougie. How about that?
Love it.
Why not?
Big-time player, that Doug.
Listen, we usually don't have guests. If you know the show, this is not news. But
right,
Doug,
we don't like people
outside.
Period.
Yeah, just end the statement. We don't like people.
But Doug Baldwin's one of the best wide receivers in the league on one of the best teams in the league. Let's keep it real.
You should do that way more often. When was the last time you had a player on?
Don't direct our show, Colleen, just because you're a big star.
Tony Romo was great. Wasn't he the last guy on?
Tony Romo was on the show. I would not say he was great. but let's start with the Monday Night Football, and let's begin with the late, late game in Denver.
Second time, and it is no good.
It's blocked here. Let's see who gets a hand on it.
Shelby Harris.
Shelby Harris shot through the line and deflected Youngway Koo's 44-yard field goal attempt with 1 second to play, allowing the Broncos to survive a furious comeback attempt by Philip Rivers and company. A 24-21 win for the Broncos over the Chargers on Monday night. Greg, this one from laugher to nail biter in a hurry, closing out week one with some much-needed juice.
Yeah, we needed that. That game was shockingly one-sided for most of the game. I think the better team won in terms of the Broncos deserving it, but what a disappointing ending that Philip Rivers got the ball back twice there in the fourth quarter.
Yep.
First time they had to punt, second time after some very curious clock management by Anthony Lynn, and I guess we can throw Rivers in there. They do get in great position for a pretty short field goal, and like, what a letdown. I was thinking, this is going to be the new LA Chargers. You know, the San Diego Chargers were on the opposite side of this game, and maybe the LA Chargers would find ways to win a crazy game, but no, they were still the Chargers.
There was no sense of urgency at the end at points for the Chargers. I was watching and I was yelling at them, go, go, what are you doing? Mm. Like, I don't understand why they were just letting time run off the clock.
I mean, it wasn't very well planned out.
No, it wasn't. And that does look like stuff we've seen from the Chargers in the past. And it to me, I guess the comeback is the story of the game. But I don't think you're in that position if you're Los Angeles without Trevor Siemian in his opening start here in 2017 playing a fascinating game. I love this guy. I think he's got an incredible arm. I think they trust him to do much more than last year. And they were in complete control of this game until the final 10 minutes.
Siemian played extremely well. The comeback came on a couple turnovers, and you open the door for Phil Rivers, and he's going to take advantage of it, which is exactly what he did. I just want to – we'll get back to Siemian, but I just want to stick with the end of the game for a second more here and talk about how – and we all get on the icing the kicker. It's horrible. I would love if one of these league meetings they came out and just said, no, you can't call timeout with less than 5 seconds.
Why not?
I just don't like it.
I just kill it.
It's annoying. It's bad
for the sport. They do a lot of things that just are bad to watch. It doesn't make sense in like a sporting way. Like if you're trying to explain it to a kid, like, wait, why didn't that count? Wait, they're allowed to take a timeout just for
and no it always reason. Generates okay. negative buzz, not
right.
positive.
Stupid.
So
I don't agree.
I will say in this case.
Not allowed on this show.
Yeah.
No, I think just keep talking. Just ignore what I said.
Wait, let me just set
You'll
it
have
up.
Your moment.
Youngway Koo makes the kick for the first time. It gets waved off, and then they call timeout. He gets out there, and it was a bit of gamesmanship by Derek Wolfe and the defensive line. Does anybody know the backstory between this? I know we were talking about it downstairs.
Well, Derek Wolfe, I don't know if it's so much gamesmanship as just intelligence from a veteran. He was beating Dan Feeney, the Chargers guard, all game long, just beating him like a drum. That's how he felt on the first field goal attempt. Again, he's going up against Feeney. He beats him easy. He sets it up with Harris after that first attempt, saying, hey, look, I can clear a lane for you. I'm going to beat Feeney. Let me kind of knock him to the side. You can go through that lane, get up in there, and block it. It was a two-man combination platter, basically, and what a job by Wolf to save the game.
Absolutely.
That wasn't the kicker's fault. It was a rare one. It was not the kicker's fault.
It's one thing to call the timeout and they make it and you have another chance to have them not tie the game. That's great. But to make adjustments if you're Denver, to make adjustments during that brief a period of time and have it have a seismic effect on the game.
So, really? Connie, it's
– Yes.
So now the stage is yours.
Okay.
You like the fact that he bangs the field goal through the uprights, but the play doesn't count because Vance Joseph is
yeah.
playing a timeout.
I mean, I don't like it for the Chargers or for the kicker, but without that, then the Broncos would have maybe lost the game. It would have tied it. They would have went to overtime.
Which would have been fun. I would have
right,
liked it.
Right, but I like the added drama of it. I like the, oh, my God, he just made it, and now he's got to do it again.
It doesn't always work. Sometimes you're the team that they missed the first field goal.
You
call the timeout, and they nailed it.
You can crush Andy Reid for, like, wasting all of his timeouts when it doesn't work out. It's my favorite part.
Right. Numbers show that it hurts you just as often as it helps you. In this case, it helped. I could be wrong, but I think the Chargers might have been on the flip side of this last season. Certainly one or two teams were where they called the timeout off of a miss, and the guy made it after he had a nice little warm-up.
The Chargers and, you know, one of the reasons they were at the top of my pain rankings, the moving thing was the reason why I made them number one. But this team, they are – They've been doing this for decades. They know how to lose games. They're one of those teams that always find ways to kill their fans with a really crushing loss and to come all the way back in a game that was over. You could even tell in the crowd in Denver was celebrating in the fourth quarter, and then all of a sudden everybody's like, whoa.
We were all texting about what a bad – what a surprisingly one-sided game and,
right.
and yeah. weekend it was. They scored 2 touchdowns in a minute 10. That second, when they hit that second touchdown to Travis Benjamin, I'm thinking there's 7 minutes left.
They're back. They're in this.
Plenty of time.
Plenty of time.
And Greg, you were on the Trevor Siemian train earlier this offseason in the sense that saying, let's wait and see if this guy is the real deal. And he looked very much like a, not just the seventh round guy that's waiting for Paxton Lynch to develop, but like a real quarterback today on Monday.
He started so few games in his NFL career that why can't we expect him to keep getting better? For a first year starter, he was really good. And I think we saw what he can do with a little bit better protection, although it fell apart late, mm-hmm. and a running game. They didn't have a running game last year, and they definitely didn't have protection. It is worth pointing out, though, he's an inconsistent quarterback. Like, he threw a pick six to start the game, and everyone's like, it's a totally one-sided game. It should have been a pick six. Casey Hayward dropped it. Like, those are things that just happen in an NFL game.
What I love about him, though, is there's nothing limited about him physically in terms of his throwing ability. And in the fact that they're, Paxton Lynch at some point is just going to be put into this starting role, not with what they're seeing, because Trevor Siemian last year, 4-0 before he hurt his shoulder, and then they lost C.J. Anderson in Week 7. That offense never was at full power. Last night, we saw what they could do.
He's juking Joey Bosa out of it.
Bosa and Ingram were in their face.
He can move.
Paxton Lynch had his opportunity this summer and in training camp to win that job, and now that he missed the second opportunity, he might have to get comfortable on the bench. Let's move on to the first game of Monday Night Football in Minneapolis.
Fake the handoff, bootleg to the right. Bradford throws, wide open, touchdown! Stephon Diggs, right corner of the end zone, and the Vikings go out in front.
Sam Bradford was a man possessed on Monday night, passing for 346 yards and 3 touchdowns to help the Vikings ease past the Saints 29-19. Mark, this was supposed to be about Adrian Peterson's big return to Minnesota, but instead we got a glimpse on how tough the Vikings can be when it's all clicking.
I mean, we just talked about the fact that Trevor Siemian is someone who could still grow. It's crazy to me that in 2017, we get the greatest Sam Bradford game you could ever imagine.
My God.
A guy that went half a decade without producing even a memorable game, even a moment that you could point to and say, that's why Sam Bradford's in this league and why he was the number one pick. Last night, this offense, it's just as much as Denver seemed to grow with Siemian in year two. This thing came together for the Vikings. I wrote yesterday that I thought the story of the game coming out would be that the Saints finally for once could rely on their defense to come in and cause an upset. Couldn't have been more wrong.
I was watching this game and I kept having to sort of temper my emotions because I was like, oh my God, this Vikings team, this offense is so much fun to watch. They have a lot of really fun playmakers. And is Sam Bradford actually good? But they played the Saints defense, and that's been the problem all along for the Saints the past couple of years. I don't know if I can trust yet what I saw last night from the Vikings offense.
Those throws, though, didn't matter what defense you were playing. There were no windows there. Like the play, I give the Saints defense some criticism in this game, but sometimes you just have to give credit. Stephon Diggs made great catches, and Bradford made great throws.
What about that throw to Javoris Wright?
Right.
It was so beautiful.
Right. So you kind of have to just tip your cap to the offense on a lot of these plays.
I guess my takeaway from the game was the Vikings, who no buzz around the Vikings in the offseason, but
it's awful in the preseason.
Everything's clicking, when their offensive line, which is a total makeover and so far so good, and their defense is always good, when Bradford is accurate and they're in that building, they're a very good home team. They're frisky. So
Dalvin Cook had an amazing night.
Well, yeah, I don't know. And, yeah, Cook went, I think, 125 yards.
Yeah.
This team could definitely contend if things stay like this. It's hard to keep it like that.
And what a fun NFC North this would be if they continue on the same path that if the Packers are good and then the Lions. I mean, that could be a three-team race.
This is a team
really
that started
fun.
6-0 last year and couldn't finish
right,
at
and
all.
Won a lot of close games, and they were ugly in defense, and so I think they have to love winning the game a little differently. Them and the Broncos remind me a lot of each other because they both had no running games last year and very poor lines, and if they can just improve both of those to average, and there's a good chance Dalvin Cook is better than average, then suddenly the rest of your team can start making a lot more sense. And people were telling on themselves when they were like, Stephon Diggs breakout game, and, oh, wow, Sam Bradford can finally throw deep. Sam Bradford could throw deep last year. We said it on this podcast all season long. And Stephon Diggs has been great. He's been stuck in a terrible offense, and he's a great player.
Yeah, what about Adam Thielen? I mean, Adam Thielen in week 16 last year had a 200-yard game. He came close last night, 157. They have, you know, yes, Laquon Treadwell is not panned out at all, but they found a way to grow other weapons. Yeah,
he did. He had a catch. That's when you know things are clicking. Like, that's a thing. Because they did start 6-0, and we were gushing about the Vikings. That's not always going to be this easy, but shows you when they
– Mark was
– I was roundly villainized for somehow, you know, convincing you guys to make
them
the team of
not,
ATL.
Not by us.
Not by
you,
Greg.
You didn't want to hear it. You
never convinced me. Pushed for the Raiders and got turned away. How'd that turn out?
Last night, I think it was midway through the third quarter when Mark was like, Vikings for team of
ATL. I was overtly kidding because I'm never pitching a team ever for that again in my life.
And by the way, you know, hey, Saints. You look a lot like a 7-9 team again.
Ugh.
Just saying.
It's tough because they're home to the Patriots, which is a huge game for them and for the Patriots. And then they're on the road in Carolina and Miami. So they have only one home game, and they've had these 1-3 or 0-3 or 0-4
starts. Can't do it again.
And they're headed for it again. You know, those are really tough slates. Their offense was also very uneven. Adrian Peterson only with 9 snaps in that game. And they got to the red zone, I think inside the 10-yard line 3 times where they settled for field goals. So it could have been a different game, but they're a little like thin at receiver and they're figuring out
also,
their running backs.
They lost Zach Strief last night, which they were already playing their backup Ryan Ramczyk because of Teron Armstead going down.
And it showed up.
You can see the pocket collapsing over and over again.
One last quick question. Would anyone be shocked if Adrian Peterson were not on the roster at the end of this season? I get
by
the money
when?
Side
what
of it.
What do you mean at the end? Of the
by the end of the year. By week 17, he's not even
on the
roster.
He might just retire.
Like during the season. Obviously,
during
after
season.
The season, I would not be surprised. I would be surprised if they cut him during the season. Yes, I would be shocked.
I think he'll stick around, but I think it's interesting to see how he was used in this game. When the Saints are winning and they're trying to run clock, he's going to have a role. But in the instances like tonight, they don't really seem to have a use for him. They even tried to work him into the passing game near the goal line once. Didn't work out.
There was all this media outrage about him not being – there was, you know, show him his respect. Get him in there for 20-plus
– Peterson.
How about you've been self-scouting your team all summer and he's not the biggest threat?
They have better options at this stage. Adrian Peterson still looks like he's 23, and I'm a little jealous of it, to be honest with you. But he's 32-year-old running back that hasn't been great in a couple of years now.
I wonder mentally how he's going to deal with that because it didn't look like he was dealing with it very well last night.
Yeah.
No, it has to be frustrating. You go back to Minnesota, you've been playing it out in your mind all summer, and then it's a –
And Dalvin Cook sets the rookie debut record in front of
you
for the Vikings. It's a good sign for the Saints that Peyton trusts Alvin Kamara that much that he played him more than Mark Ingram. That's what I'm surprised about. Mark Ingram's so good, I kind of hate seeing him only get 20 snaps.
Loose Cannon, hi.
How are you?
Good stuff. Good stuff. Good start to the show. Good stuff. A lot of football talk.
Yeah.
They moved the desk, so I have to look behind Greg to see you.
This is really messing up Dan.
You know, we were watching that the Mike and the Mad Dog 30 for 30 where they talked about the power chair. You need to see the producer, and I need to look around Greg. I feel like maybe this was a coup d'etat.
I can see her perfectly, maybe I'm in the power chair.
Colleen's really in the power chair.
No, I actually can't see her at all because the camera is
very clear view from right here on the end.
Everyone's conspiring against me. That's my takeaway. Let's do some news.
Here he is having the time of his life this night making his head coaching debut.
And we will start with bad news for the Arizona Cardinals. David Johnson will undergo wrist surgery this week. He's expected to be out 2 to 3 months, NFL Network's Mike Garofolo reported, according to a source informed of the situation. ESPN First had this. Of course, he suffered the injury in week one. He got a second opinion on the wrist. There was hope, Colleen, that this was going to be a situation where they would be able to not miss too much time. But now the guy that was the entire offense for that team last year, coming off a game in which Carson Palmer frankly looked like late period Peyton Manning, Dan Marino, and now David Johnson's gone for half the season, if not more.
Yeah, it's a huge blow to the offense. Carson Palmer looked really rusty, and then you add in the fact that their best offensive player, they're going to lose now. And This is a guy who led the NFL in total yards and touchdowns last year. He was everything sort of ran through him, and it opened up everything for Carson Palmer. But now that you don't have him and you have Carson Palmer not looking like he did 2 years ago, that's a major problem.
Yeah. SOS. I mean, this is a team that it is September 12th, and it could not possibly – you couldn't have scripted a more grim beginning to the season. This is a guy who talked about wanting to get 1,000 yards on the ground and through the air, and I think he could have done it. And he talked about 30-plus touches a game, and the team was on board with that. And what's behind him is literally incapable of producing anything close.
Yeah, Kerwin Williams, Andre Ellington, they re-signed Chris Johnson.
Who they got rid of because they didn't think he was any good anymore.
Right, so he'll probably have a fairly minor role. It's a really good defense, potentially. They certainly collapsed in that Detroit game after a while. But their MO is not really like, let's win with defense and just enough from Carson Palmer. I'm not willing to write off Carson Palmer after one game, but it's putting a lot of pressure on him and the passing game, which, by the way, is missing their starting left tackle for the next couple weeks with DJ Humphries. The good news is they do have the Colts this week. They do host the 49ers in a couple weeks. They play the Cowboys in between. I don't know. Maybe you can get out to a 2-2 start there.
But then what? That's my question.
Well, you find your legs as a different sort of defense team, and Carson Palmer has to be good.
You need
the way, they also have the
news.
Cowboys in the middle of that.
Right. I said the Cowboys in the middle. Maybe you get 2 wins, 2-2. I think Palmer can be good.
Right. In the short term, you need some good news, and the Colts with Scott Tolzien or whoever coming up next, that's some good news. If they lose that game, forget it. I mean, this is one of those seasons where it could just snowball and hurry.
Well, because they've talked about it this is our last-ditch effort to be a Super Bowl team, which doesn't even make sense at this point for them anyways. And you wonder about Arians next season. Palmer, you wonder where he's going to be by midseason. The wheels could fall off.
It's a shame. This was my pick, a great one, for MVP this season was David Johnson. I mean, that's the kind of conversation this guy is. I mean, he's like we've only seen running backs like him come along every couple of years. It's crazy.
And he hurt his wrist, and then he went back in, and then that's when I think he might have even hurt it more when he fumbled the ball. Like, it was already a problem.
You have to be wondering what Bruce Arians thinking, a guy that, you know, probably is putting a lot into this team and believes that this was a team that could make a run, and now they are severely compromised.
Their superstars always get hurt. Palmer, Tyrann Mathieu, and now David Johnson. They never have all of them together.
More injury news. Just an update here on the Indianapolis Colts, who we were just talking about. Andrew Luck is already confirmed out for week 2. And now it's becoming more and more clear, which we kind of had an idea. But this is something that's going to be going on potentially for some time. And do we have is there a quarterback decision yet? How is it being played with Chaz Pagano?
Well, they're talking about Brissett as a potential starter for week 2.
Is he ready to be their quarterback? He just got there.
Could you be any less ready than the current starter?
That's the situation.
They won't announce it yet. Maybe by the time people hear this, it'll come. They said he certainly doesn't know the playbook entirely, but even then, maybe it's worth playing him. And I think you have to put – when's the over-under on Luck getting back? I mean, at the earliest, it's probably week 4, according to NFL.
Which is at Seattle.
Insider Ian Rapoport. You're right. That's on Sunday Night Football on NBC. Like, it's going to be some time.
Plus, it doesn't help that they don't have Ryan Kelly, their center. So the offensive line is already sort of
like everyone killing Tolzien, and I get it. He had a couple of pick sixes. But like that play that was one of the pick sixes is a great example. It was a terrible snap because you had a new center. Right. It's a timing throw. He like picks it up. He's late on the throw, and it gets picked off.
Yeah.
Finally in the news, Thomas Rawls, the Seattle Seahawks running back who missed week 1 with an ankle injury, should return on Sunday against the 49ers. Pete Carroll, via the team's official website, said, yes, we do expect Thomas back. He should be raring to go. This is good news, Mark. Their running game, you know, you can get excited about Chris Carson. I didn't think he was moving that well. I wasn't that into Chris Carson other than the 130-yard run. Eddie Lacy doesn't look like he's Eddie Lacy anymore. So they kind of need Thomas Rawls, but you don't even know, is he the guy that broke out a couple of years ago?
Well, I mean, Rawls finished the season last year as a dynamic player. I thought he was explosive, and he looks like a starter. And you're right. I mean, I think Carson, give the Seahawks credit. It seems like every season they have found some rookie running back that's going to play a much bigger role than you'd expect. Maybe that will be Carson down the stretch. But Rawls, for me, removes Eddie Lacy as a starting option. Eddie Lacy did not look good.
Eddie Lacy looked awful. He had 3 yards rushing on 5 carries. I mean, Mike Daniels just completely demolished him.
It's telling that in his first game in Seattle, Chris Carson was the one on the field in a huge game for the vast majority of the second half. Like, hey, we need to win this game. Who gives us our best chance? How about the seventh-round rookie who's never played an NFL game
right.
while Eddie Lacy's on the bench?
After months of questioning, how will this shake out? It's like, no, it's not going to be the way you predicted at all.
All August, I was excited about the Seattle offense. I still am. I don't put too much into that week one loss, but they do need to establish a running game to keep defenses honest, and Rawls is a key figure there. That's what's happening in the news. Uh-oh. You know what time it is, guys?
What time is it?
It's time to get on those shoulders of greatness, presented by Head and Shoulders.
Oh. How do we get on the shoulders?
Can you help us up?
Yeah, I don't know quite how
Dan
to do
Dan could
it.
Carry Colleen and I around, I feel like.
Maybe, yeah.
You're pretty strong.
I can try.
I'll just walk, apparently.
Mark, you're kind of in between. I don't know if you can carry us, and I don't know if you can.
Wait, Dan's shoulders are the shoulders of greatness? What is going on here?
No, I thought I
was. So many things to potentially dispute.
I thought I was carrying, and maybe this just shows how humble I am. I thought I was carrying Colleen and Greg to the Giants' shoulders.
Okay.
This is a giant we're talking about, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll scale this massive figure myself while you, three of you, get there on your own.
Always a telltale sign of
Well, you can get there on your own. We can't.
A telltale sign of someone that's humble is someone that points out, this is how humble I am.
Stand up. Be humble. Okay. So here we go. A lot of great shoulders in week one. So I'm going to throw out 4 names with a quick, info about what kind of performance they had in week one. I want you guys to pick who you thought had the greatest shoulders in week one. Yikes. Here we go. T.J. Watt, a third player with 2 sacks and an interception in his first NFL game. Calais Campbell, wow, 4 sacks, setting a franchise record in his first game with Jacksonville. Kareem Hunt, what else do you need to say? 250 yards. 2 touchdowns against the Patriots. And Matty Stafford, how about that? His not my favorite stat, 29th career fourth quarter comeback.
You're not building leads. But
yeah, exactly. But he did throw 4 touchdowns and led the Lions to win over the Cardinals. Real quick, Mark, around the horn, who had the greatest shoulders in week one?
How could it not be Kareem Hunt after what we saw? Yeah. I'd be literally kicked off the show for the next 12 months if I pick anyone else.
Kareem Hunt was awesome, especially after having that first carry. It was a fumble, and you saw how upset he was on the sideline. It was almost like they were trying to console him and talk him off the ledge, and then he just went back out there and totally did his thing.
I mean, you got to give some of the shoulder love then to the offensive line because he had some big
holes.
Yeah.
I don't think it's crazy to go with someone else. Calais Campbell literally set the franchise sack record in the first half of his first game with the franchise as a huge
free agent.
Those
are great shoulders.
So that's my shoulders I want to stand on. Plus, I think he's 6'8".
He's strong.
He's 6'8". You're getting Kareem Hunt. You're like a foot down from Calais Campbell's shoulder.
I mean, if someone runs for 200-plus yards on the Patriots next week, could they possibly win this award in your
mind? Yeah, he has quick shoulders.
Yeah, he's got nice shoulders.
I mean –
You're a foot higher if you're on
it's
Campbell's
It's nice to
shoulders.
Discuss Campbell, but how on earth does Hunt not win this?
Tamposi, obviously. Obviously Kareem Hunt, right?
Okay. That came close to hitting my.
I was a little nervous.
Paper cut across the face with that air.
That could have taken out both your eyes in a worst case scenario.
Not gonna be claiming any human giants at that point.
Hideous scenario. That was Shoulders of Greatness presented by Head and Shoulders. Yeah, we really got to the bottom of that, guys. And we
thank
will,
God
resurface again next Tuesday. All right. Okay. All right. What are we talking about?
Are we doing Thursday Night Football?
You want to talk about Thursday
the
Night
TNF.
Football? Because as you guys know, just minutes ago, I was unaware what the matchup was. And now I am going to jog my memory.
The Texans and the Bengals.
The Texans
what a matchup.
And think about it. Think about who needs this win more. Let's start this way.
See, it's too early in the season to be cynical about any matchup.
No,
I
won't be cynical.
Flowers.
I will spin it as this is a tough situation for both teams in terms of their week one performances. The Texans, who have all sorts of quarterback situations. Again, Bill O'Brien in the middle of it. You think that home game after the hurricane they would have won, but the quarterback couldn't play, and they ended up losing easily. Cincinnati, Mark, my God, Cincinnati gets shut out at home by a division rival.
That.
It just very rarely happens
unless
there's some type of extenuating circumstances, which there were not. So who do you think? Let's start this way. Which team had a more troubling loss to you? And let's start there.
Well, I think the Texans. You have to take into account everything that people were going through personally. And it was assumed, I thought, there's this one scenario where the Texans come storming out with all this emotion and just drop a bomb on whoever they're playing in week one. Instead, I think it went the other way. And I would give them a better chance to bounce back, potentially. The Bengals, to me, have core issues on their offensive line. This guy, Cedric Oboye, was absolutely victimized.
Oboye?
Oboye,
did you get it?
Oboye, because I went and listened to the telecast to make sure I got it right.
Oh, good job.
Was taken to town by Terrell Suggs. I mean, he was absolutely taken to town. And just as if we're going to talk about...
Now he's got
to
play Watt and Clowney.
Exactly. Oof. Gets no better. And Andy Dalton, yes, you can say Andy Dalton with all the interceptions. It's just like a few other quarterbacks we talked about on this episode. Andy Dalton, some of his mistakes go right back to the fact that he had people in his face, like... instance after the ball snapped. You can't operate as a quarterback in that space.
They lost Andrew Whitworth and Kevin Zeitler in the offseason, and they really didn't do anything to help fill that void.
Well, they had young players that they wanted to count on. That's what the Bengals do more than any team in the league. It's worked to a point. It's not working right now.
No, and because of that, they couldn't run the ball, and also Andy Dalton had the game that he had, and it's almost like he looks like the Andy Dalton we saw in, I guess, what was it, 2015?
I'd say 2014. Before
the year that he was great.
Yeah,
very, very similar teams. I think Houston has more to worry about, because to me the Bengals are a veteran team who are playing a really good defense that knows them and had a great game, and there were some red zone things, whereas with Houston you didn't see anything out of that offense. They had 5 concussions in the game. All those guys are going to miss this.
3 tight ends.
This game. They were starting Bruce Ellington, who just joined the team at wide receiver. He's one of the guys that got hurt. Like, they're really thin throughout their offense. There's nothing about their offense that I can look to and be encouraged about. Their offensive line, which I think was one of the worst going into the season, is now missing a couple more people on top of Dwayne Brown. Whereas you look at Cincinnati, it's like they have players. They have players I like on both sides of the ball, and I'm willing to give them somewhat of a pass for one bad game and see if they can crawl out of it, and that's what I expect.
The Bengals were actually in that Ravens game
until
third quarter. I mean, the score looks terrible.
They just couldn't score.
It was red. Once they got over in the red zone, they were terrible.
And Baltimore might have the best defense in the AFC.
I think Baltimore's defense looked great. I think it was a bad day for Cincinnati. So I'm not going to go and say Baltimore are the 85 Bears, and I'm not going to say Cincinnati stinks, because I think the Bengals are going to be in the mix this year. And for that reason alone, I mean, having a second home game, I just find it hard to believe that they'll lay another egg. I think they'll play very well, in fact. And I think this is a game that they're going to be okay. And I think we're going to look at Houston as 0-2. And I don't know what their quarterback situation is right now. I think Bill O'Brien's talking later today, Tuesday.
Expected to be Watson.
Yeah.
Fully expected to be Deshaun Watson, not officially confirmed.
And Watson he threw a touchdown pass already. He was ahead of Tom Savage. But he didn't do much else in the rest of that game either. So I think the Texans are a work in progress, because now they've done what probably they wanted to avoid, which is they have to get a kid ready to win games, and that might take a couple weeks, and it could cost them their season.
And Deshaun Watson, he's going to have to face Geno Atkins, who I thought was one of the only bright spots that I saw for the Bengals.
I think they get back Adam Jones from suspension.
Yeah.
I think Jalen Strong for the Texans is back. This is one of those games I wrote on the debrief on Tuesday.
Oh, get that plug in.
NFL.com/debrief. How there were a higher percentage of teams under 300 yards in week one than there had been in a long, long time. Like, almost half the league was under 300 yards this week. More than any week, for instance, all of last season, more than any week one since 2010. It was a defense-heavy season. And I can just imagine Thursday night this game playing out like that. Two teams maybe under 300 yards, and some kvetching on Twitter about, you know, not a high scoring game, right?
Let's pick the game with the score. Mark, you're up first.
Bengals will win this game. If they don't, they go to Green Bay next week. But in general, I think we overrate what happens in week one. So much changes from there on out. I go Bengals 22, Texans 11.
I'm gonna go
22-11. Interesting score. Okay.
Well, you know, sometimes I find my scores because I go first. they create too much of a mimicry around the room at times. And so I want to pick something that can't get picked.
Except by Greg.
Okay, I'm going to go Bengals, but it's going to be a low-scoring affair. So 9-7.
Whoa.
Really low.
No mimicry is
I don't trust anybody.
Side.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think Cincinnati gets back on track. I think Joe Mixon has a big game. Dandy Dalton actually throws two touchdowns to A.J. Green. And guess what?
22-11.
22-11 is my fun. No, 27-7. Houston continues to struggle.
That would not be a barn. That would not be a good game to watch, 27.
No.
I'll go 24-14. John Ross might play in this
not
game.
Not too far from 22-11, Greg. Not too far.
No one
I went
scores
totally
22
or
11. Not too far away.
It's pretty rare that
not
those
too
numbers
far away.
Pop up.
And
pretty
this is for Greg. Thursday Night Football will air on NFL Network at 8:25 p.m. Eastern.
It's the official kickoff.
You know what?
Of Thursday
when do we
Night
start
football?
Getting a little yes. color rush action?
I'll be in the office.
It's a good question. You're they right. had it last year for Week 2.
Yeah.
I think.
Maybe it's this week.
I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that the colorblind game occurred around this time, which
it was week two,
befuddled Greg while trying to cover the Bills Jets.
Correct. Was not sure if Ryan Fitzpatrick had thrown an interception or a completion. I didn't know what was happening.
All right. So there you go, the Thursday night preview. How exciting. All right. We said earlier we don't usually have guests on the show, but when you have a star involved, Doug Baldwin from the Seattle Seahawks, we get him on the show. Doug is here on behalf of Vizio, and let's be honest, you know, Vizio, that's a good television. When you go in the back of the store, I get the one on the cheaper end, and you save a few $100. Doug's with Vizio, so right off the bat, Doug's flying.
Got a splurge, yeah.
How you doing, Mr. Baldwin?
I'm doing well. So to help you out with that,
you
can go to Vizio.com/bigplays this year and enter for your chance to win a MCAST Smart Series 50-inch TV. M-Series SmartCast 50-inch TV. Any play that goes 40 yards or more that ends in a touchdown, a lucky fan's going to win a TV.
Can you affect the raffle at all in our favor so that one of the four of us would come away with the technology?
I don't know. There was a young lady earlier that said something about my jacket.
Oh. Swack it. I asked if it was
great
swack it.
And that's Colleen. What did you say about his jacket, Colleen?
It looked comfortable. Looks like it's a soft material, like a sweater type material, maybe.
Swack it. But that's not a thing. You just
it's a thing now, Greg.
Colleen, as always, Doug, forgive Colleen. She makes things weird. All right, let's talk a little bit here.
Sounds inappropriate.
Yeah. A little bit. I want to start. Okay, week one in the rearview mirror for the Seattle Seahawks. I'm just curious though with. With a game of that magnitude, the Packers, Seahawks, you could say their biggest rival. It could have huge playoff ramifications, ultimately with a tiebreaker down the line. Who hosts the game in the playoffs? I know you don't look ahead that way, but as football fans, you do. Do you kind of wish a game of that importance is a little deeper into the season than right there, bang, week one?
No, actually, I don't. I'm glad that we started off with them that early because it gave us the ability to test who we are as a football team. And, it may come down to – later in the season that we have to see them again in the playoffs, but we would look forward to that. You know, again, it's a great opportunity to go up against a great team. Hopefully, people will be watching that game, us in the playoffs, on their M-Series SmartCast TV.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah!
That's how you do it. That's how
solid
you get
plug.
The cheddar.
The Seahawks and the Packers, it seems like they're in the divisional round every year, nearly. They're often playing at the end of the year. And I'm thinking back to, like, when you started – facing off against the Packers, and when you were starting your career with the Seahawks, you're an undrafted rookie who signs a 3-year deal. Then now here we are 6-7 years later, and kind of you and Russell Wilson are the guys on the Seahawks offense. When I think about the Seahawks offense in terms of guys who have been there year after year and are going to be there for a long time, like, can you reflect on your journey to that role, and does it mean a lot to you that you and Russell are kind of like the two main guys on the offense?
To be honest with you, I don't think about it at all. And the reason being is because we have a task in front of us that we have to give all of our attention and focus to. And so I don't think about that. I appreciate you saying that. It's very kind of you. I don't think about that at all. We have a task before us. We've got many games that we're anticipating and aiming to win. So, Sorry, don't think about it. We got this game coming up. That's all I'm focused on.
But do you feel like you have a different role, I guess, on the team? Like, having been through that, like, do you consciously feel like, okay, now you're at a different part of your career than you were earlier, and that brings with it different responsibilities?
You know, absolutely. First and foremost, my body is telling me that this is my seventh year in the NFL. But secondly, obviously the young guys that come in, they look to me, to Russell, to the older guys for advice, you know, specifically, you know, in our receivers room about how to take care of your body, about how to mentally prepare for the games coming up. And so, yeah, I do see that. I do feel that. But, you know, typically when I'm out there on the football field trying to perform for the best of my ability, I'm still that rookie that's coming in just trying to prove myself right again.
You know, you've been with Pete Carroll from the very beginning in Seattle. Do you, how much time at this point in your career would you say that you get one-on-one time with Pete Carroll? Do you guys ever go out and, like, get a burrito together, maybe talk on the phone about life? I mean, people, you just assume that the coach is there every day. What sort of interaction? You guys have known each other for well over half a decade. How personal can it get? How
conspiracy
close are you guys?
Conspiracy theories? He's into conspiracies? Yeah. Stuff like that?
Pete and I go way back. You know, we'll go out for occasional drinks, you know, some Martinelli's apple cider.
Nice.
You know, we'll get fitted for our swackets occasionally.
Nice.
We do a lot of stuff together. Honestly, we get a lot of one-on-one time here in the facility, right, at practice, in the meetings. We do have a number of conversations where it's just one-on-one. And Pete does a great job of doing that with his guys, making sure that, you know, he gets the pulse of our team. And so he does that a lot. And no, I don't see him that much outside of the facility. He's got his family. I got my family. And quite frankly, I don't want to see him after I've already seen him for 12 hours out of the day.
Hey, if you want to have a TV and be a real human being, you get a Vizio. But also, if you want to have real cereal, right, Colleen? There's something else cooking here.
Here's the thing. I was going to ask Doug about his connection with Russell Wilson after leading the team and receiving yards yesterday. But then I saw you have your own cereal. How much input did you have into the name of the cereal, the type of the cereal, the design on the cereal box?
It's a handsome-looking box.
I appreciate that. But all the input. If I put my name on something, I'm going to be very hands-on with it. So, yeah, I had a lot of say in it. That cereal, it's very similar to a cereal that I grew up on that I loved growing up. So, you know, being fortunate enough to have a cereal that I love, you know, and with my name and my face on it, it's pretty cool.
What was that cereal that you loved growing up?
I know. It's got to be Honey Smacks, right?
Baldwin Smacks.
Right. Got it. Totally got it. Baldwin Smacks.
Only Baldwin Smacks. You're completely in the clear. How about the idea? There's some critics out there, Doug, that say – the image on the box, you have no helmet. On some level, you're delivering a stiff arm that maybe the ref would blow the play dead. You're not wearing a helmet. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, I've heard that argument. However, anybody who makes that statement, I can counter that argument with it's a cereal box, it's a commercial, it's a cartoon. Just eat the damn cereal.
Seems fair. Seems fair.
That's a good ad. That's perfect.
That's very fair.
Good advice.
All right, Doug. So, yeah, what are you doing? We've heard a little bit, but we can't get enough of it. What are you doing for Vizio? Big screens for big plays.
Yeah, so this football season, Vizio is going big. Every time a play of 40 yards or more results in a touchdown, Vizio is going to give a lucky fan a big screen TV, an M-Series SmartCast display, to be exact. Very easy for fans to go enter in their chance to win. You go to Vizio.com/big plays, type in your information, and go win yourself a TV.
Dan, you could maybe win it.
I mean, that's what I
forget the fans. I want to win.
Yeah,
I could too.
Oh, that's awesome.
The books would feel a little cooked there, but
it's a status symbol. All right, the Seattle Seahawks host the San Francisco 49ers in week 2. Doug Baldwin, good luck and stay healthy, and congratulations on your televisions and your cereals and your swackets.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
There you go. Thank you to Doug Baldwin. And speaking of Doug Baldwin and the Seahawks, that takes us to our final little topic of today's show. We call it 0-1. Oh no!
I like it.
I don't know if am I hitting the pronunciation correctly there. I'm not sure. Okay, 0-1. Oh no!
That's closer. That's better. That's much better.
We workshopped like this for hours yesterday, and this is what we came up with, which is concerning. But I'm not sure that's the pronunciation.
Yeah,
Dan, known for his.
You know, nice pipes. Never heard it in that pitch before.
I can go up there. I can rock the falsetto.
I want to hear another
Mariah Carey action.
The other thing it could be, and this is why it's to understand the segment, it's all about the punctuation, because it's not 0-1. Oh, no.
No.
Mm-mm. We're asking.
We're asking.
Question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Though the inflection goes up.
Yeah. All right. We're going to go through four teams that are 0-1. And we'll start with you, Connie Fox.
Okay.
Since we just talked with Doug Baldwin about the Seahawks, are the Seahawks in trouble in your mind at 0-1? Oh, no?
So I'm really worried about that offensive line. Their defense is great, and they were in Rodgers' face all day. But that offensive line was a problem last year, and it's still a problem right now. If Russell Wilson wasn't the mobile quarterback that he is, he would have been sacked twice as many times, at least. They couldn't run the ball. Eddie Lacy looked terrible, had 3 yards. But I think that the fact that they struggle on the road against the Packers usually, and it was a tough matchup for them, I still have a little bit of faith that it's not, you know, it's not terrible, but I'm worried. It's not completely, oh,
wow.
No, but I'm worried about
wow,
them.
Wow, you're worried.
Yeah.
I'm not at all.
Really?
This is my Super Bowl team. I'm not worried at all.
That O-line doesn't bother you?
Listen, that was a tough matchup on the road, and they hung around. The offensive line maybe could have been better, but they were missing their starting running back. And I think they're going to be fine. I think they're going to be fine to the tune of 12-4. And I think they're going to get on track immediately here. So, no, they'll figure it out.
It helps.
I'm not worried at all.
It helps today. The Arizona Cardinals at this point could be in deep trouble. Mm-hmm. And Seattle's one of these teams we mentioned on Sunday that it's just too many of the same people in place for me not to trust that they'll figure out a way. They've had offensive line troubles in the past. They look looks chronic right now.
Here's the thing, though. They have a left tackle. They weren't planning to play at left tackle who had a really tough
game. Did not look like a left tackle.
And then they have Luke Joko at left guard who, when they signed him, Pete Carroll said he was one of the best guards in the league last year, you know, and I trust our coaching to make him one of the – and it's like, what? And then he had – like, what are you talking about? And
that's more like a, oh, no, but
yeah.
Slammer. That's a slammer, oh, no.
Is that okay. An exclamation point?
Oh, no, yeah, they're going to be fine. Cool. My Super Bowl champion pick.
All right, so yeah, there you go. All right, so you're kind of that's a bit of a hero pick for an.
I'm a little worried. They had a couple bad calls against them.
Well,
but
you're getting out in front of this. If they collapse, we'll point back to September 12th when you nailed this.
Mark, let's talk about the Washington Redskins. Sloppy game against the Eagles at home in their opener, and now they're trying to get it back together in week two. Oh no,
I'm pretty more like oh no. I'm a little concerned about this team. It channels back to the preseason.
I didn't know what that meant, though.
I don't, you know, it's like.
I know what he's saying. I know what he's saying.
Okay. Oh, no. Not too good.
Oh, that's good right
It's there. Constant shots down the field by Kirk Cousins. This seems to be the entire offense. There's no sustaining running game. The defense is ho-hum again. And look at this schedule. This would have been an easy one in years past going into Los Angeles this week to face the Rams. Not sure about that right now. Then you have the Raiders and the Chiefs. Then you have a bye week. Ooh. Better take a vacation. Then you come back, 49ers, I get that. Eagles, Cowboys, Seahawks, Vikings, Saints, Giants, Cowboys, Chargers.
That is a rough
scenario.
NFC East, rather, schedule is tough because their out-of-division games are – for the most part, difficult. Are they in L.A. this week?
They're in L.A.
That is a really interesting game. I'm not sure if I'm worried about the Redskins yet. I kind of want to see a little more. I didn't think they were going to be great to begin with, but I don't know if they're going to be a team that's out of the mix. This is a really fascinating matchup this week because the Rams have a lot of the same great things that the Eagles have up front and you would think could expose.
Well, Aaron
you're running out
back?
Of time to gel if you're Washington.
Yeah, I think he is playing Aaron Donald.
He's going to be back. They had a really good offensive line last year. They struggled in the preseason and they struggled in week one, so that's something they're definitely concerned about.
That was good, Mark.
Thank you.
I didn't get a good.
Well, I didn't agree with
grading?
You as much. Yeah, okay. But it's still the effort was definitely solid. I think the Rams got 2-0 written all over them. By the way, we'll see. But they kind of have that feel of like the team that's going to get out to the hot start and surprise people. Next up is the New York Giants. I'll talk about the G-men, and I'm gonna hit you with a oh no.
Really?
Yeah, because you know
this
I love
is my Eli. Super Bowl pick.
Yeah, you know I love Eli, I thought it was a little troubling what we saw on Sunday night. And I get it, Beckham will be back, but is Beckham going to hit the ground running once he gets back? I don't know. Is he even playing a week two? We don't even know that for sure, although indications are that he will make his season debut. I just thought if you're a Giants fan, that game gave you nothing to alleviate any concerns that you had last year about your offense, which, as we said on Sunday, has not scored more than 20 points in 7 straight games. That Eli, you know, looked a little you know, frankly, just looked ineffective, looked a little lost. The offensive line overmatched the running game, just nothing going on there. And does that all get better when Odell Beckham's back in the lineup, and does Brandon Marshall feel more like himself, and Sterling Shepard finds his footing? Maybe.
Yeah, because it didn't get better for their offense last year when Beckham was on the field half the time. I just don't see them as a very diverse offense, and they did literally nothing in the offseason to fix it. And
Wait, didn't you just pick up to go to the Super Bowl?
Here's my problem. I did that in August.
Uh-oh.
And they were I was convinced of the Chargers side of it, and I saw the Giants, and I said this even in my initial tweet. It was sort of a vision. Well, that was a vision that I'm very concerned about. I'm very concerned about the Super Bowl.
Area man picks Super Bowl.
Well, hold on real fast.
They were at the number one seed, though. They were at the number one seed in the NFC.
Yes.
It was 1 week, and the thing we like about them is their defense. So
their defense can make
it
a playoff
their
team.
Defense.
Janoris Jenkins did a great job again on Dez Bryant.
See, so I'm not worried about
it. I didn't bring up the defense because I'm not worried about the defense, and perhaps they can win games like the Ravens did, for instance, last week. But with that offense,
couldn't you see
bit,
like three all. NFC teams? Like it would be like 10-6, 9-7, 8-8, 6-10. Like they're all going to be clumped together and kind of eat each other up.
I think Cowboys fans would say, what more do we got to do to have some belief in us? We just had a great defensive performance and best offense in the league last year.
Well, they're not on this list.
I know, but he was saying they're going to be 10
and
6.
I think 10 and 6, they could be as good of a team as they were last year to some degree. Everything kind of went right to them. 10 and 6, when I'm looking again at each of these schedules with these teams in this NFC East division, it is a murderer's row. There's no break.
The correct answer, 8-8, the Cowboys. That's
really?
That's where you're going?
I'm still with it. I'm still with it. I'm not giving up just because they beat Odell-less Giants. Finally, Greg, oh boy, the Tennessee, I call them the Titans. Everyone, oh, that's not fair. All right, you call them the Titans. How do you pronounce it? Not the name, but the expression.
0-1. Oh, no. I don't even know. How do you say it if you're not worried?
No, that's
like, how about, oh, hell no. Oh, hell no. I'm not worried about it.
No, time
how
out.
Do you make
time
it
out.
If you're not
I'm
worried?
I'm calling a timeout. That's cheating.
You're adding
you
words to it.
You have to stay within the structure of oh, no.
How can you say oh, no, but not be worried at all?
That's for you to figure out right
oh, no.
now.
Oh, no.
All right, there you go. Oh, no. That's good. That expresses
that worked.
Cool.
A good young team who got beaten in the key moments of that game. The Raiders were a better team, but I think the Titans are young. I'm a little worried about their offensive line. I like the Redskins, played very well last year, had a poor preseason. Jack Conklin has not looked great, did not look great in this game. That's a little bit of a problem. But overall, I think they just got beat by a team that is ready and willing to be one of the teams in the AFC. And I think the Titans are going to be a good team. That's an acceptable loss. And I didn't see anything in that game that changed my mind about that.
You know, we kill on the show the Chiefs, and they're boring and everything. I'm watching this game yesterday, and I'm like, you know, we get on the Chiefs are having conservative offense that doesn't get you excited, but what am I supposed to be excited about?
Well, hold on.
The
Chiefs looked like Chiefs of years past and gotten banged in New England?
I'm not talking about that.
Well, I think week one changes a lot about the Chiefs.
No, I'm saying
you have exciting
the general
elements.
Idea of a team that's a little dink and dunk. And Corey Davis, made some plays, but I was frankly bored watching this team on offense.
Marcus Mariota does things that no other quarterback in the league can do right now.
He made some great throws over the middle.
He struggled.
He also
got
outplayed. Extremely outplayed.
I think
the team has
a way to get, but outside of Aaron Rodgers, maybe Marcus Mariota does some stuff that I don't see from any other quarterback in the league. That's a starting point.
Some great runs in that game. I think their running game is one of the reasons they're fun to watch, and it didn't look good against what's supposed to be a not very good Raiders defense. So that's something. I think you'd have to be a little concerned if you're the Titans. They're counting on that running game to really carry them.
Yeah. To your point, Dan, Tennessee has not arrived, if that's what you're looking for after all the April through August buzz.
I'm not trying to hammer home a narrative. It was more just the ideas. I'm watching and I'm like, there's a lot of like 6-yard passes and dink and dunk stuff. And I was expecting maybe a little bit more at this
stage. But we did hear before the game on Sunday that Marcus Mariota he might not be 100% yet.
Still,
yeah,
he ran well.
He looked
extremely
quick. It was
kind
of an overlooked factor in that game. Those two guys went out for the season on the same day in week 16, and here they are looking rather good in week one.
Carr looked great.
You just take it for granted.
In summation, oh no, summations. Mark yours
for the Redskins.
For the Redskins.
Oh no.
Colleen.
It's going to be a long year.
Colleen for the Seahawks.
Oh, no.
Zeuser for the Giants. Ew, no. And Greg for the Titans.
Eh, no.
No, that's not eh. That's eh. Cheating.
Yeah.
It's got to be the O.
Oh, no.
Okay.
There you go. Oh, no.
There you go. All
right. How quickly all right. will this segment return?
We will be back. We will return, Mark. How about that?
Okay.
On Thursday night, that's when you'll next hear. We will recap this game that we just previewed and then get into all the rest of the week two games. Every team in the league is playing, so that will be fun to dig in on. And thank you to Doug Baldwin for joining us today. That was nice. And thank you to Colleen for working us into her schedule.
Oh, come on.
It was nice. It was nice for you to do it.
What do you mean? I do it every week.
Yeah, go start working on the shows that actually pay your bills. I don't
blame. Stop it.
It's okay.
Tough crowd in here.
Yeah, so we'll be back on Thursday. Thank you. And remember, again, the Pick'em airs on Saturday, 9 a.m., 2 p.m., and 11 p.m. Eastern on Sunday, 6 a.m. Eastern, which leads into Connie on game day morning. And this is the video show, ATN Video. NFL.com/ATN Video. So check it out at your leisure, starting at 9:30 Eastern, 6:30 Pacific. All right, let's go.
All right.
Stan Hansa signing off for the Quiet Storm. Connie Fox, they call her. No boss. And a loose cannon behind the glass. Till Thursday.